Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hi, folks. How are you doing? I hope this finds you well. I am recording this as we speak on a Sunday evening, ahead of another exciting week that involves. I know what I'm going to be doing this week. I am going to be chatting to Celine Song about her new film, The Materialists, which is coming out in cinemas in a couple of weeks. But I'm very excited because it gives me the opportunity to dive into past lives as well, which I absolutely adored. What a great film! So good. So I cannot wait to have that conversation and share it with you. I hope over the week as well, you've had the chance to maybe watch something, whether that be at the cinema. In fact, we went yesterday to our local view and watched Fantastic Four, which we loved a lot. Also, much conversation was to be had about the trailers that we saw. The three in particular that really excited us was Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey. Of course it did. The Running Man, which is Edgar Wright's remake of that film, which I want to go back and dive into with the kids, actually. And then One Battle After Another, which is the new Paul Thomas Anderson. So I'm slightly proud that my kids get as excited about the trailers as I do. Job done as a parent, I would say. Also, thank you very much for everybody who has recommended either tracks or artists to add to our Jack Kerouac playlist for Be In The Scene. You can still do that by heading over to our socials, which is at Be In The Scene, and tell us the song or the artist that is a given when you hit the road and you make a playlist, as we compile a lovely playlist from you all. I tell you what, some of the tracks on it already are fantastic. So we'd love you to be part of the team. But right now on this brand new episode of Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman, we've got a double header for you to start the week, as both composers who worked on James Gunn's Superman join me to discuss their collaboration on the film. We'll release my chat with John Murphy very shortly, but first it's the turn of David Fleming, who was previously a guest on the show, along with Gustavo Santaolalla, to talk about his contribution to The Last of Us. Now, I should warn you, by the way, that this conversation contains a massive spoiler about that show, just in case you haven't watched The Last of Us yet, as well as one or two little ones about Superman. So, without further ado, let's get cracking with David's cue from Superman Home. Lovely though, because I genuinely, over the last year probably, there's been so many times where your names come up either in the work that you've done or referencing you. Erwin Winkler talking about you, that was amazing, that was so great, that kind of thing of Han recommending you and then being blown away by the work that you did for All Tonight's, which I have to say was an extraordinary score. So huge congratulations on that.
Thank you. That's so nice of you to say. That was amazing. I mean, working with Erwin and Barry, it was like, I said it was like being tied into all of a sudden into a Hollywood that I got to experience, because there are stories. I mean, like, you know, there's the stories that you get working on some of these big films, but the stories of their era, especially Irwin, who's produced so many amazing films, it's just like, you're like, why aren't the cameras rolling right now to capture what you're talking about? It's pretty incredible. So it was cool to tag along with that project. And yeah, and Hans so graciously recommended me to Barry, and we hit it off, and he was my strike buddy. Like during the strike, he was coming over. You know, he couldn't go into the edit room to work. They had taken down the edit room until the strike was over, and so it was kind of like he'd come over to talk music, and then at the end of the session, you know, usually when you finish a meeting with the director, it's like, you see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you doing tomorrow? And I'm like, come back. So it was really great, actually. It was a strange thing, because I think had the strike not been there, we would have had to snap back into things and get the movie done very, very quickly. But obviously, we wanted this, you know, the strike to end so that the town could get back to work. But selfishly, I was enjoying this time of just collaborating one-on-one with the director, whose focus was solely music instead of everywhere else. Yeah, that was fantastic. I'm glad you liked it.
An impact in terms of the unique nature of that, of how close you were able to work with him then, in terms of, I don't know, whether it be how the music connected or how kind of intrinsic it was to so many elements, I think, of that film.
I think it did, because story points that he was interested in that typically he might or one might handle in the editing room, because he couldn't access that, you know, we were forced to think of other ways to kind of, hey, this scene is feeling a little confusing, or this scene is feeling a little slow. What if we connected these two scenes? Maybe these are things you would do in the editing room, and because that wasn't available, music became really important in ways that it usually isn't. Like really important to momentum and connecting long sequences and sort of creating montages that weren't necessarily montages to begin with. So maybe a couple scenes, and said, well, you know, one of the things that I've always loved about Hans, and something that he looks for, is how can we make this a longer story musically? You know, let's not be bitty about it. And how can we make you realize that you're not seeing a series of scenes, but you're watching a journey? You know, you're part of this.
You're in it almost, in a way.
And just being around Barry was fun, because he, you know, he was so steeped, also wanting to know about the music of that era, and he knew so much. And Gabe Hilfer, our amazing music supervisor, was trying to find, you know, needle drops, and Barry would say, what about this group and this group? And he was amazing in the encyclopedia. So yeah. And also just very funny, and the stories are always what I remember.
Yeah. I did a Zoom with him for it, and then I was in person with Irwin, and it was proper pinch me moment, do you know what I mean? Just in terms of like talking about Conti's Rocky score and stuff like that. It's like, oh my God, this is like mental that I'm... Yeah, it was so crazy. But his enthusiasm, I mean, considering he's what, in his 90s now, his enthusiasm is like, the energy of his enthusiasm is kind of, it's extraordinary.
Yeah, he's like, you know, he's a real monument of the film industry. So
talking of monuments of the film industry, hello, Superman.
Yes.
Oh man, it was so great. It was today, actually. I was just getting out, looking back on my chat with James, and I asked him this really sweet question, because obviously this is such a, you know, it's his childhood, really. You know, he's kind of, there's so much of him as a young kid embedded in how he wanted to tell the story. So I was like, okay, you get to don the cape. Which scene out of any Superman film are you going to, do you want to be in, sort of thing? And he went, I just want to be flying up at the end of this film, holding my wife with the cape on because I've not seen her in ages because I've been so busy with the film. So cute. But I had your music underneath it, that main theme, that opening, because that is, oh my God, what a way to start a film musically in terms of that, the build on that. And then as soon as you get that motif, it's you and John's version of it, however that worked, it just gets to your soul. It's amazing.
Let's not beat around the bush. It's John Williams. It's the most iconic superhero theme of all time. So you know, one of the, it's kind of rare privilege of this project was being asked to use this gem of film music, this I keep using the word iconic, but it's more than that, because I think it's got so much heart to it as well. It's not just the logo. It's not just the red, blue, and yellow. It's got so much to it. And the beautiful thing I think that we kind of discovered together was how rich the film, the theme is. And I say discovered because when you encounter it, it's of course this amazing piece of music. But James, you know, he really wanted to use it. He knew there was something about the DNA of that theme that touched him so much when he saw the Richard Donner version, but he didn't want to use it straight up at the same time. He also knew that. So what we ended up doing, and it wasn't sort of a decision right at the beginning, I think it was in steps, was sort of breaking this DNA into different parts and kind of finding different keys to James's Superman throughout. So when I came on the film, John Murphy had already done this really great electric guitar arrangement that happens at this very crucial part in the film. And they used it in the trailer and it was there. And then when I started using the opening, the da 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 da, as sort of a, obviously, yeah, use it right in the beginning and it makes you feel like it's a Superman. But also we were using it for action beats and things like that. But a little bit further in the process, there was this kind of through line that I noticed that we weren't kind of addressing musically, which was essentially Clark's purpose for being on the planet, his purpose for being on the Earth. And you see it, you hear it the first time when he's hearing his Kryptonian parents, you know, the message that they left him, which is why he's there and is so crucial to his own identity. And then throughout, you know, the film, when that's revealed to not be what he thought it was, he kind of has to figure out his own purpose and why he has all this power. And it was sort of being dealt with piecemeal in different scenes, and it wasn't kind of a through line. We didn't feel like we had the right thing from the theme. And then I said to James, I said, the part of John Williams' theme that always touched me is the ending, when it goes da-da-da. It's just a few notes, but it can get you. And I think it's kind of deceptive because you just think of it as the ending, but the beginning of the theme is, it has all the might and the strength and you know, the iconic nature. But something about that, I felt that there was something emotional in it. Mm. I was just playing around on the piano and doing a very slow version of those notes over these rising chords. And I could tell James was kind of getting emotionally affected. And that became this last piece of, you know, the John Williams DNA. So it's sort of in these three parts. It's the big fanfare, which is all the strength and the fun. It's the dun, 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 which is like the essence of the character. And that's when he has giant big wins. And then it's this last part, which seemed to kind of uniquely fit David's portrayal and James's portrayal as well, because it is a more vulnerable Superman. He's still figuring things out. And I think, you know, by the end of the film, he acknowledges that his humanity is his superpower. And I think, you know, what we tried to kind of discover about that last piece of the theme and how we could use it in its own way is that it had a little bit of that humanity. It sort of cut through the iconography, hopefully, and got to this, in my view, really relatable version of Superman James has done.
We'll be right back.
feel kind of hearing that back, you know, when an orchestra is playing it, when it's your, you know, it's your interpretation and reversioning of, it's a reworking really of, as well as your own stuff in there. But it's, but obviously when, you know, like you say, it has got those kind of little original motifs in there. And even you sort of singing those few notes to me makes every hair on my arm standing in. What's it like for you when you're in that room and the orchestra's playing it back to you?
Well, when they're about to play, it's the most terrifying experience in the world. I'm not completely sure, but I think for those pieces, we had the choir go first, actually,
Oh,
which is
wow.
unusual. And especially on the soundtrack, it's called Last Sun. It's the opening when you first hear his Kryptonian parents' message. Something about the women singing those notes, but in this new way, was so emotional when I heard it for the first time, because it was so gentle, but it had all that power of its history, really. Obviously, we're doing a James Gunn film, and it's very singular in that way, but he's bringing the history with him, and he's saying, this is what we all love about this character. And
Yeah, he's not shying away from what's gone before, and that's so, because I think that so many people, where they do, you know, they're coming into something that has a pre-existing element or whatever it is, you know, it's sometimes they can almost try and just kind of shut the door on it. And I love that he's fully, it's kind of love and adoration and respect for it really, and almost kind of bringing it with him as a companion in a way.
yeah, that's what's amazing. And I think it shows through a lot of his films, but maybe none more than this one, is that he's kind of known for his humor and his edge, and that, you know, he does things a little bit differently. But at the same time, his films always, and I think this one especially, have this really big heart
Yeah.
under the surface of all of that. And, you know, that goes, you know, with casting David, and also when he described how he wanted his Superman movie to feel, of he wants it to be fun, but also really sincere, but never self-serious.
Yeah.
And the sincerity without being self-serious is the trick of what makes it special, and I think what makes it his film. Because I don't think he's as interested in the myth of the Superman. You know, obviously superheroes are our modern myths. You've heard that a million times, but he kind of, I'm not saying he rejects it, but he's more interested at the humanity of the
Yeah.
characters. That goes for all of his films, but
Yeah.
it's tricky with Superman, because people have the audience has so much personal connection to this character and different versions. You know, like for me, the comics were my way in. I remember the Superman before I remember any of them films or the animated series or anything like that. And the comics version of Superman really comes across on the screen here, and that was exciting to see. But people have different versions of him, and it's really tricky. I think the other key to what James did, and really smart thing, is, you know, over the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years, through all of these superhero movies, I feel more and more what's been in vogue is edgier, grittier, more realistic, to some extent darker. And Superman as a character has kind of always been the antithesis of those things. And I think that's been a tough circle to square. And the way James presents, you know, there's this whole thing in the film about Superman's optimism sort of being the new punk rock. It's interesting if you think about it, because he as a character is kind of subversive now, you know, considering the mainstream of these comic book films tends towards the grittier stuff. It's cool, and it's punk, and just to be honest, and you know, find the beauty in things. And I thought him sort of framing Superman like that was really exciting, and I think we tried to keep that spirit alive in the music too.
it's sometimes as well, it's brilliant with those where the tiniest little moment will just kind of allow a kind of a moment of kind of laughter, or, you know, whether it's the squirrel or whether it's the, you know, the whole or whether it's the, you know, the conversation about social media and stuff like that. There's just these kind of really funny moments, but that kind of depth of what he's trying to say is kind of always there. You know, it's kind of, it's just, it's great. And I think also the casting of Nicholas as Lex and also as, you know, for Lois as well, I just think that was just so great. The strength of Lois's character in particular. You know, I remember with the original films, that was kind of like, yo, God, never seen a woman on screen like that before, really. You know, you know, in terms of just her kind of strength and curiosity and not taking no for an answer and all that. She was amazing. And I feel like he kind of really celebrates that in this one as well. And Nicholas, oh my God, he's so brilliant. He's so scary.
Well, he's also a really human character. I was saying to my wife that I think, you know, after the premiere, you know, we've watched hundreds of times and she worked as well, but it was the first time that I was like, I think Lex is really the secret sauce of this film, because I was watching a trailer for some other comic book movie and the villains are bringing doom and supernatural and it's end of the world kind of stuff. And if you think about it, Lex is so human. He puts it out there. He's not even ashamed. He's like, yes, of course I'm driven by envy. This is, he is equally a vulnerable version of Lex. The problem is he's got all the qualities we wish we didn't have. Superman's got all the qualities we wish we did have. And it's sort of a beautiful flip side of the coin, because he's equally vulnerable and it's from this very human place. And then Lois and Rachel Brosnahan is
oh my God, so good.
One of the first things I sort of tackled when I came on was kind of her through line, the Daily Planet stuff, which kind of becomes also her investigative through line, because, you know, you know as well as anyone, when you start a film, usually there's temp and everything is decided. And the Daily Planet scenes were one place where there wasn't any temp and it was completely dry.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, hey, there's an opportunity to make these reporters heroes of their own sort of tempo and their own kind of, because they're on a different journey than Superman and Lois specifically, because she has that intrepid, you know, momentum to her. So that was kind of fun, and it also allowed me to procrastinate on thinking about Superman moments by concentrating on reporters and But I agree with you. Those two are the three leads. I just think are so well cast.
I totally forgot. It's that thing I've kind of seen the film once, and you're trying to remember so much from it. And I can't wait to go again with my kids. The little kind of they're not the Justice League, but you know the little
Justice Gang.
The Justice Gang, yeah. That little kind of sub story thing is just so funny. And his haircut and just all these kind of like, it's there's so many tiny little things. The ingredients to the film just are delicious.
Yeah. It's funny that you brought up him and the haircut, because when I first watched the film, seeing him in it with that haircut was really when I realized that, oh, James is making the comic books that I grew up with. Because I remember my first comic books, you know, everyone knows Green Lantern, but Guy Gardner, that version of Green Lantern, I don't think he's ever been on screen before. I might be wrong about that. But I remember that character so well from the comics, as, you know, he was just constantly kind of a dick and just kind of a thorn in Superman's side. So The nice thing about James is that he goes deep in the comics. And, you know, because everyone has the characters you know, and, you know, when making a big film like this, it's obviously easy to say, let's go with name recognition and these people. But James really finds these characters that haven't been fully exploited on screen, and they have their own quirks. And so that was him. Seeing him was kind of my realization that this was going to be very fun. So I got to do this Justice Gang music, which they're sort of the antithesis of Superman's sincerity. So they're kind of like the Spice Girls of a superhero group. You know, they're put together by a corporation and they're still figuring it out. They don't have their name. They kind of make a mess of things. So their music is kind of, it's intentionally using some tropes that I normally shy away from, but they're almost intentionally cheesy and haven't quite figured it out. And I always thought of the music as their idea of what is like, hey, we should have a Superman.
Yeah.
We should have our own superhero.
Yeah.
It's almost like Guy Gardner would have hummed these notes and said, yeah, that's our tune. So it's music for a self-aware and very cynical sort of superhero operation, which was also fun to do.
There's always so many rumors about, you know, oh, James Gunn is going to do the next 45 DC movies or whatever it is, sort of thing. But I know he's kind of like, he's very much embracing that, kind of almost taking the mantle for that world, sort of thing. And it, and you know, this, how great this is, sort of just really warrants so much more from him, you know, in terms of almost like you say, like really leaning into the comic books as the way to kind of drive story and the characters.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting because so I grew up hugely into comics. And I remember sometime in the 2000s where comic book movies really took off. And I couldn't have been more thrilled. I was so excited that all these characters were getting made. But it's funny because now comic book movies have been such a thing for such a long time that you almost feel that they start to reference themselves. And by going back to the source, which is what I think James has done, and the way that those comics feel. And it's not really about how a comic book movie feels. It's how the comic book feels. It makes this movie more colorful. And I think that will spread out with whatever he tries to do. I think he's going to, my hunch is that he's going to embrace the colors of comics. And it's not just going to be the same Superman thing. It's going to be, let's follow this character to its extremes, whatever that is.
I'm still not totally convinced that the new message that we get from his parents is real. I think Lex AI'd it.
Oh, interesting. I love that take. That's really good. Now, is that because it's too heartbreaking to consider that it's real?
Bradley wouldn't lie.
Oh, it's about Bradley.
No, it's
Cooper.
Got nothing to do with Bradley, no. I don't know. I almost kind of feel like then it kind of Lex has kind of almost got one up on him in a way, even with the outcome of the film. That was a question I had in my head when I came out going,
I didn't think about that, but I will say that obviously that's the biggest turn from the canon of the movies that we've seen and the comics even.
Yeah.
But I will say what it did for me is one, when it happens at the movie and at the end of the movie, when he embraces his humanity and specifically, you know, the very end, my wife cried the first time we saw that, and she's not a comic book movie person instinctually, and I get touched every time I watch it. So it was a big risk, you know. Honestly, the whole film, now that it's come out and people are seeing it, I'm realizing the risk of doing something like that for James, but also this character in general, and doing this sincere take on the character. And it might seem easy because it's Superman. And it's like, yeah, everyone loves Superman, but because everyone loves Superman, it's very, very tricky.
I don't know if you saw that beautiful documentary that was made, the Christopher Reeve story.
Oh yeah,
Okay.
amazing.
Yeah, they're such a great team that make that those. They've made a couple of documentaries, one about Alexander McQueen, one about these amazing Paralympians, and then he did the Christopher Reeve thought. And I just thought it was done so beautifully, so kind of revelatory as well about him as a person. I found anyway. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I remember speaking with Elon about that, and because I had done the Henson documentary, and he had done that one, and I was talking about it in the beginning of when he was talking about it, and it was interesting to see, similarly, like Christopher Reeve, similar to Jim Henson, that everyone has this warm feeling in their heart when they see him and feel that they know him. Strangely, I think it's not just about the Richard Donner version of Superman, it's also about the Christopher Reeve portrayal.
Yeah,
I think
I felt that.
many people and I think James thought was thinking about that, I'm
Yeah,
sure.
Idea Man. I wanted to mention talk about it briefly. I've been doing a little show on a kind of BBC digital station where we it's called Radio 3 Unwind, and it's and I do a show called Cinematic Soundtracks where we play film and TV music that is specifically got a kind of almost like a calmness about it. And so
Nice.
I've been rinsing your score for the Jim Henson documentary. There's so much beautiful music in that as well. Oh, it's been great to play that and kind of celebrate that. That's a great film. And again, the music is just so, it's so weird. This sounds really kind of weird to say, but it kind of feels a bit like I don't know if you knew him or if you met him at all, but it feels like that it's almost a bit like spiritual in terms of it's kind of it's got like his presence almost throughout the film.
I certainly didn't meet him, but we talked about that spiritual nature of him with Ron a lot, and I think Ron does a good job of capturing it in the film too. He's kind of this whirlwind of productivity on the top, and he's just going, 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 and so much of Ron's film focuses on that. But he had this quiet spiritual energy at the core of it, and in the film you see him confront that a lot when someone close to him dies. And he did have this like Zen quality to him, but very playful. I don't know what it is, but I think it was certainly something we were searching for when we were doing the music, that Ron wanted to search for how do we talk about this guy musically who was so soft-spoken but was so loud in what he made,
Yeah.
and kind of try to make sense of that juxtaposition. Again, not hard to tap into the emotion, because everything that Jim Henson made touched me, touched a million
Yeah.
people. So yeah, that was an absolute pleasure to work on.
And you broke me with The Last of Us as well. Oh my God.
I'm sorry, we killed Joel.
Jeez. Took
I
me
didn't.
like a couple of weeks to be able to watch another episode.
I've never gotten so, excuse me, I've never gotten so many angry text messages on a Monday morning. Why'd you kill Joel?
You not played the game, come on.
The people who played the game had this like sick voyeurism about it, that they knew it was coming. Their hearts had already been broken, so I think there was like this, they loved watching everyone else, catch up.
Yeah. Oh, it
But
was brutal. It was brutal.
part of what's amazing about that show, and I think about the source material, the video game, is that it doesn't shy away from brutality. I think there's something about, the fact that it's a fungus that takes over. It's the brutality of the natural world, you know, and then of course the brutality of humans. You know, my contributions to the show tends toward the brutal, but I will say that I think the genius of the video game of bringing Gustavo on and continuing on the show is the capturing of the beauty side of life with that much brutality surrounding it. So it's been a pleasure. I mean, yes, being steeped in the brutal side all the time is sometimes quite a, it's a bit of a weight, but I love working alongside Gustavo. And in fact, we finally got to perform together this year, and we did this little Deadline concert, and we played a medley of our stuff, and I played on his stuff and he played on my stuff. And it was so much fun that he's like, because our contributions have been alongside each other and respectful, but never direct.
Yeah.
And season three, let's do some stuff together. And,
cool.
Yeah. So I've been joking with him that we're like the opposite of every other band, you know, normally they're all really tight. And then they slowly get like, we're just getting tighter and tighter.
Yeah. I got the chance to, he was in London for the South by Southwest here about a month ago. And so he was doing something for Spitfire Audio. He'd just done the Ron Rocco stuff with them. And so he played the theme, and it was like, everybody was just like sobbing in the room. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Just a little overwhelmed by seeing him, feeling the energy of that instrument and its uniqueness and him playing it. Yeah, it was extraordinary. It was great. What a gift.
Powerful. It's what he does is powerful. And it's something that I've learned something from everyone I worked with and alongside. And the thing I've always taken from him is the power of negative space in the music, which sometimes you have the opportunity to do, sometimes you don't. But the power of the Ron Rocco is that when he plays it, especially in that main theme, when it's by itself and there's nothing else around it, it's the power of the space around the instrument.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.